I'm Lance Carter, and you're listening to the Daily Actor Interview Podcast. Hey, guys! How'd you like to see Edward Norton playing twins in a movie that's directed by Tim Blake Nelson? How could that not be great? And guess what? Leaves of Grass is great. Edward Norton plays twins Brady and Bill. Brady's a small-time pot grower, and Bill is an Ivy League professor. Tim Blake Nelson, who also wrote the film, plays Brady's redneck friend Bulger. The movie is funny and violent, and at times you have no idea where the story's going to take you. This was another roundtable interview, so my question is somewhere in the middle of the recording. Now, on a side note, I've been interviewing people for a while now, and I have to say, Tim Blake Nelson is truly one of the nicest guys around. The day after this interview, I was in the hotel lobby when Tim was standing next to me. He said hi, and we started to have this 5-minute-long conversation. It wasn't about the movie or anything like that. It was just a normal conversation about barbecue.
Tim, I was wondering, as an actor and as a filmmaker, when you are involved with films and selling characters, do you involve yourself with the films that act as kind of a corrective or do not, you know, go straight towards the stereotypical kind of easy laugh?
Yeah, I certainly do. I do grow tired of intelligence having such a limited manifestation in movies. It usually meaning coastal, a certain level of formal education. And so when I wrote this, I knew immediately that the wisest and smartest characters, two characters in the movie, in this movie would be the ones who either remained in Oklahoma or returned there. So the smartest guy in the movie is Brady. I think that's evident, and it's also stated by the mother. And the wisest character is Carrie Russell's character, and she's chosen to return and write in Oklahoma, and I think she gives the Bill character the wisdom that allows him to begin to move forward in his life as it's collapsing around him. So in answer to your question, I was eager to debunk certain stereotypes about Southern characters in this movie.
This question's for both of you, and it has to do with that, obviously, to believe in the kind of duality of it, you have to have a suspension of disbelief. And I'd like to hear from you how you achieved it through filmmaking and how you achieved it through your acting.
Suspension of disbelief in a story like this is pretty essential. Although, that said, I think you have to be responsible to your story as a storyteller to make it feasible enough. And I hope that this story is feasible enough. There are details peppered throughout that I didn't want to bang the audience over the head with it. I mean, an obvious question would be, well, hang on, wouldn't folks know they were twins, but they didn't grow up in Idabel. In the Idabel Broken Bow area, they grew up in another town, Hugo, and Brady has moved to Idabel. But these stories are all far-fetched, but the antecedent material for the movie, like in Menander and Plautus and Shakespeare, it's a retelling of a twins genre. And the main character in the movie is a classicist, and so that's all very intentional. It's meant to reflect on those earlier works. The character Bill has done a translation of Plautus' play, The Menaechmi, which is a Roman twins play. And so suspension of disbelief and that whole question is part of the fun of the movie. All right, now he's going to say, thanks for referencing Menander.
I was actually going to say that any questions I had about whether a you know, a redneck from Oklahoma could actually go and become a Brown classical philosophy professor where it ended when I met Tim. because I think, like, as you can see, one conversation with Tim, and you kind of realize, like, oh, Bill is a believable character. I really agree with the idea that there are kind of, you know, there are not just archetypal characters, but there are stories, types of stories that going way back to classical drama and stuff like that that have sort of certain structures of you know, just suspending disbelief in them. But I think for me in this, I didn't find I thought that the two worlds it was trying to straddle was kind of delightful. I loved it, and I thought it was not something I had ever seen before, which is always hard to find. And and Tim is so authentically rooted in both of those worlds that it really, you know when you're being driven by someone who knows where they're going, and you can feel that when you read a script, and I think you can feel it when you see a movie. You know, and I think that was a big part of the appeal of it to me, was that it was clearly a film that only Tim, you know, knew how to make, because he owned it all. And you know, I've that's something if there's something that if there's a criteria that really tends to get me interested in a piece of work, apart from any kind of personal reaction I have to the themes, if I feel like this is the right piece of work for that director at this moment in their career, you know, that's a big draw. I mean, whether, you know, like, I felt that way with Fincher on Fight Club. I felt like this is the guy to handle this text and just hit it out of the park. And I felt that way with Spike Lee on 25th Hour or David Jacobson on Down in the Valley. Like, if you feel like someone just knows what this is about to their core and knows how to bring their personal style to it, it's gonna have that kind of special confidence in it and that's strong. I mean, for me, the only thing that really was, you know, I wanted us to be careful of was that the twins never felt like a trick. That it felt that you stopped looking at the seams and you felt that these were guys inhabiting the same space and interacting with each other in a very extemporaneous way. So that was, for me, that was the thing I wanted to make sure you buffed the seams out on it.
Logistically, Tim, how did you do it as a director with your team also acting in the movie, and then in your own internal work and physical work, how did you economize those two performances so that you could buff out the seams and make sure that you were at least getting enough into the camera so that in editing or with the mocap or with the green screen, you guys could make this thing completely believable through not just performance but the technical aspects?
Remarkably, there's no green screen in mm-hmm. this movie. There's motion control. Mm-hmm. And technically, there were all sorts of challenges. But really, the soul of it is Edward's talent. You know, you write these characters, but, you know, when you write a movie, and all you can hope for and depend on is that your actors will elevate the material. Because screenplays aren't written to be read, they're written to be made into movies. And what's so remarkable about Edward, and that I think comes through so beautifully in his performance in the movie, is that he's so truthful as an actor. The source material from within him is so gorgeously accessed that the dramatic bass notes in the movie, such as when he's eulogizing his brother, are just exquisitely rendered. And then at the same time, he's able to play the loopy comic moments. And so few actors have that sort of bandwidth. But then whatever also brings to you as a director is this incredible mind. And to play these twins, it really was quite a juggling act. Because he has to, and he'll talk about this, but he's not going to compliment himself, so I'll just enjoy the floor for a moment. It takes a mind, a rare mind, to be able to map out a scene as character A in a way that will leave room for character B and how that character might respond. And so it's almost, as it were, a cubist way of thinking. You're looking at the scene from all sorts of different angles. And he's just got the ability to do that and to do it truthfully.
And that's why you have to keep a schedule of 36 days. Well, I mean, we did those two things, letting him find both characters and explore them.
Again, a huge advantage having Edward, because he's directed a movie before. Mm-hmm. And so one thing he appreciates is, you know, how hard my job is. And he was always very sensitive to that. And we finished this movie a day early.
There's a little bit, you know, there's a little bit of the Dirty Dozen in it. Like, you know, Donald Duck goes here. And, you know, I mean, I think you have to, knowing you've got to pull, you have kind of a no room for error kind of a scenario in terms of, like, if there's a day where we're doing the twins on the porch together, it has to be finished that day. There's no, so it really, it really was like, I think the thing we did the best on this was prep for literally, like, on a given day like that, how, if you answer all the questions about, like, we're going to show up in the morning, we're going into this character first, we're doing these shots and these shots and these shots, and then the twin shot, you know, if you map it, then you leave yourself more room to play, you know what I mean? But I think what we did well was sort of say, like it, you know, we had a very, very, very clear roadmap of how we were gonna handle it technically and in what order. You know, no sitting around going, mm-hmm. well, maybe we should right. try to do X, and that way at least you've got the room to. You've got a little more breathing room.
With the motion control team, with the motion control team, did you guys work from a base previously recorded performance for timing, making sure that the conversations?
We get Brady done first, set a performance with which Edward and I were both happy, and that was a collaboration. You know, it was never, you know, with somebody like Edward, you don't want to say, this is the one we're going with, whether you like it or not. It needs to be something we agree on.
I don't even think we ever, like, when we were almost always, once we laid down, you know, if we started laying down stuff, like, I think we pretty quickly always gravitated toward, yeah, that's what we've got. And sometimes we would have something and kind of look at each other and go, like, let's do one more to try to see if we can juice this or that little moment. Or if I... You know, sometimes if I had an idea, you know, we'd have one we like, but if I had an idea by doing it a couple times, sometimes even in something regimented like this, there's fun ways to improvise. And when you start playing with these, what these techniques can do, when you start realizing that there's actually not like a clean line on the screen past which one character can't go, when you realize it can shift and stuff like that. Sometimes right in the moment, you know, I would have like a thought, like, to have the one character go over and fake kick the other one. And
or the mirror shot.
Yeah, have him jump back. Yeah, actually the mirror was fun. Originally we had one idea about it, and then we started realizing we could actually have them touch stuff like that if we did the angles right. And I think, so sometimes we would throw down some improvisational kind of stuff and see if it would stick. And I thought some of those things are what actually make you go, you know, huh? Like that's interesting. And that's what we wanted. We wanted just a couple. It only takes like one or two moments per scene, you know, of people overlapping in conversation or touch or interacting in a way that feels really, authentically extemporaneous to do the job of taking away the idea of the effect, you know, and it was fun. We also had, they do some things now that they didn't do back in the day with Twin Things, where, you know, you can do this kind of stuff with actual moving cameras now, and that made a big difference too, I think.
Much more simple question. Through the course of this film or previously, have you guys ever tried noodling? And how did you get Kerry Russell to kind of play with that?
I've done about every different kind of fishing you can imagine.
All right.
But I've never noodled.
Okay.
And the reason I've never noodled is because I don't want to end up getting bit by a water moccasin. And that's, I'm just too afraid of snakes. And getting Kerry Russell to do that was about the easiest chore that I had as a director on this movie. She had a great attitude about it, and she and Edward were fantastic together. You dream as an actor's director of being able to let moments breathe in two shots. And one of my favorite moments in this movie is just letting the camera sit on Edward and Kerry on that porch in a two shot when he tries to kiss her. It goes on for several minutes without, you know, and I never had to cut to a close up. They're so exquisite together. You just it's just great.
I have a question for Edward. In your career, it's been relatively rare for you to do movies that are primarily comedies. Did the fact that this was a comedy attract you to the film, and can we expect to see you in more comedies in the future?
Mm-hmm. Sure. I mean, I never. I don't tend to kind of like say like, oh, you know, time for another one of this or that genre. Things flow to you in a strange way, and why you bump into a certain kind of thing in a certain moment is. Yeah, and some people know you in a certain way, and some people don't, and, you know, I mean, it's hard to explain. I mean, I knew Danny DeVito, and he knew me, and so he, like, really wanted me to do Death to Smoochie, and I love that stuff, and I had a great time doing it, but I don't actually, to me, Fight Club was a comedy. We got into all of it. You know, when Fincher sent me the book and I read it, I called the first thing I asked him when I said, this is a comedy, right? And he went, oh, yeah, that's the whole point. And I said, okay, I'm in. You know what I mean? Like, that, so I don't, I certainly wasn't, like, you know, imagining myself as a dramatic actor when I was, like, running around in my underwear and floor shine shoes and, you know what I mean? I mean, it's like, I thought Rounders was a comic movie in its way, too. First time I directed a movie, I was, you know, wanting to do a comedy. So, you know, I like things that aren't sort of superficially one thing or another. Mainly, I think, you know, my favorite comedies are ones that are really smart too, and I think have a whole second level in them. You know, when we worked on Keeping the Faith, I think I was looking at a lot of Cukor's old films and things like The Philadelphia Story and stuff that's, you know, hilariously funny but really, really, really smart and kind of, you know, cutting critique in the humor too. And this, when I read it, I mean, mainly I was laughing a lot at the lines and you know, I mean, I remember reading, you know, like, you know, Brady saying, not the Merriam-Webster, either the motherfucking OED. And I was like, sometimes, there's always a line there's all, for me, there's always a line or two in a script. If you, you hit it and you go, you kind of almost decide to do the movie off of, you know, a line or two, like, and that, you know, that that was it. Those kind of, a few of the things like that in this, for me, I was like, that's too funny. That's you know, just the you almost do it for the fun of getting to say a line or two like that. So I'm sure, you know, I don't have any specific plans, you know. I guess if, you know, maybe if Seth Rogen calls with a great buddy pick, I'll be there.
Actually, ask about we'll a different, different kind of green, your environmental initiatives, if you could just, you know, be a good chance
with the whole again.
Yeah, I work on a lot of different things when I'm in life, away from movies and stuff. I've been very involved with a few specific efforts, whether to build a, we built this park in New York out of an old train trestle that's been a very, very successful project that I'm really proud of, and I've been working on that for over 10 years, and it's great. You know, it had over 2 million visitors in the first year, so we're really excited about it. I work on a specific conservation project in East Africa, and I find, you know, to the theme of Tim's film, of balance, I think it's too much of this kind of stuff can get you a little bit wrapped up in your own work, and I love it, but I think that, to me, apart from caring about certain issues that I think are our generation's kind of particular issues, I don't think we, you know, we're not being asked to fight World War II, but I think we, a consensus is emerging among our generation and people younger than us that we do have a defining challenge in the moment, and I think that's it. And so I like being engaged in something that's a little bit bigger than you know, the finger noodling I do in art, but it's also, you know, it stimulates your brain in different ways, so I think it's good.
Cool, thank you.
Yeah,
You guys are both fantastic in the movie. Edward, playing twins as an actor, how do you go about creating a character, both of those characters who are the same but different? And Tim, being the writer and director, as an actor, does that make your job easier or harder?
I mean, for me, it's the same. It's the same as always, just twice. And I think in this case, you know, I hear people talk about, like, you know, actors, some actors being intellectual actors, some actors being instinctual actors. I always think it's kind of crap. I always think that anybody who knows anything about it knows that good actors sort of do both. They do inside out work and they do outside in work, and you can't not do both. Like, so in something like this, you know, Tim's provided a lot of good work on the inside out. He's given you in a script like this a lot about who these characters are emotionally, and you don't really have to. Yeah, you know, you've got a great roadmap to that. So for me, with these guys, it was a little bit more outside in. It was like, not in an intellectual sense, but in just a tactile sense, like, what do they wear and how do they sound and finding the skin of them. I think in terms of the twins in particular, I think the only thing that I thought was interesting was that I poked around about twins a lot, and what was interesting was that it was very hard to find anybody who was an identical twin who didn't focus on how much they were alike, and really seemed to powerfully assert that identical twins are endemically, like, alike in many ways. And that brought up interesting conversations with us, because the script is emphasizing their apparent differences, but then what we started doing was talking about all the ways that they're actually the same, and that made it a lot of fun. There was a lot of fun details in that, you know. Like, we added the line that, you know, that Bill says you're still using vinyl, and Brady says, yeah, you know, I don't go for digital. You can't improve on the classics. And because he's really the same as Bill. He's just as committed to a set of classical values as his just happened to be Little Feet and Townes Van Zandt, you know.
Acting, you know, I'd never acted before in one of the movies in a movie I've directed. This felt like the time to do it, just because the movie itself is so much of a platform for the lead actor. It's really written for an exciting performance, and it really depends on the audience watching an extraordinary actor have a great time pulling off this feat. And it made sense to me as the director to act in support of that, and to be around as a sidekick who doesn't say much, but is just around to help both characters out of certain problems. And I just loved
doing that. He tried to punk out on it. Sorry that we were doing that. The producers made.
Yeah.
We were trying to imagine a better face for Bulger, and it was hard to come up with.
But it was great. It was really fun, and I don't regret it.
Mainly, he just wanted to wear a do-rag.
Very good film. I do have one question. The Richard Dreyfuss scene, mm-hmm. It takes place during the Sabbath, and he charges both Brady and Bulger with the menorah. Mm-hmm. Are you worried? And then there's the violence scene. Are you worried that some audiences might misinterpret it? Now, it may be misconstrued a little bit. And do you think it might turn off some audiences?
We haven't had that experience. I mean, like Peter Travers from Rolling Stone showed it to a huge crowd at his screening series in Paramus, New Jersey, which is.
I'd say about 70% of the audience is Jewish.
Yeah, and they just went crazy for it. just loved it.
I'm a Tulsa Jew and have a religious upbringing.
Right.
So, and again, the movie is very much about contradictions and balance. You know, the Zionist Tulsa Jew who's pugnacious. Is a reality. I grew up around it, and I think it's really, really funny and surprising and unlikely. And drama is all, and drama and comedy to me are all about being surprising, coherent, and true all at once. And what more could you ask for than a Zionist yokel who has pictures of himself? And again, I grew up around this.
Right.
You would go into these guys, most of them in the oil business, really successful, into their offices, and there'd be pictures of them with world leaders of both parties, pictures of Moshe Dayan. They were Zionist. You know, it's what I grew up around.
At the same time,
really
when you've got a pipe salesman that's called Maccabee Pipes, I'd say I would have to say you've got your tongue planted firmly in your cheek.
Right.
But then, I won't name the company, but there's a company in Tulsa that has a biblical name that is based on. I mean, it's real.
This question is for you, Tim. This movie is basically your baby. You wrote, directed, co-produced, acted in it, and it was also sort of like a homecoming for you, you know, doing it based in the place where you're from. So just wanted to know, what did it mean for you to make this movie? Because you were just so ingrained in it.
This movie has everything I love in it. Classics, my home state, philosophy, literature.
Orthodontists.
Orthodontia. You know, even my wife and two of my children are in it as actors. It was really, because I love the material, the source material so much, it was really easy to write
and an utter delight to get to direct, because I had people like Edward elevating the material and surprising me in their interpretations of all of this stuff that's so close to me. So this
it's all down to
this was really a lot of fun. I'd love to sit here and say that it was some sort of rigorous, poignant, and debilitating struggle, but it wasn't. It was just great.
You should just say it'll never be this good again.
Thanks, Edward and Tim, and thank you for listening. Keep coming back to DailyActor.com for more interviews, news, and columns. I'm Lance, and I'll talk to you soon.